Let's change the world together. Welcome to the Snapcast, the podcast for all nonprofit professionals, bringing you interviews and amazing ideas for nonprofit leaders.
Hello, this is Mickey Desai, your host for another episode of the Nonprofit Snapcast. I'm still talking with David Pauly about strategic planning. We're going to pick up where we left off with our last conversation. David, you have said to me in your notes here that there are too many nonprofits that and too few well-run nonprofits, and that in an economy like we're having right now, pandemic economy, there's going to have to be some consolidation. You mean consolidation of nonprofits, not just consolidation of programs, right?
Absolutely. And since we've been talking about strategic planning, a good strategic plan lets an organization play a stronger role in setting its own future as opposed to just hoping for the best. I'll use an analogy that in the early 1980s, the United States deregulated the airline industry, and they deregulated the airline industry with the goal of making flights affordable for the vast majority of citizens. And they achieved that goal. But in the process, that involved creating hundreds of airlines in the industry. And there was way too much capacity for the traveling public or the tickets. And so over time, airlines had to consolidate down to a match of what was survivable in the market. Now, think of what in the world of nonprofits, funders, and particularly institutional funders, have been telling us this for years. There are too many nonprofits that overlap and that are scrambling for the same dollars from the same funders. And in a crisis like we're going to see right now, Mickey, you've had Linda McNay from our fundraising search on, and her message, I think, rings true. This crisis is going to hit annual funds and small dollar donors incredibly hard. Mm-hmm. And so your focus really has to be on major and institutional donors. We're not going to get out of this crisis with golf events and wine tastings.
Right.
And so foundations and corporations and major donors have said, been saying for years that there needs to be a consolidation because nonprofits are not recognizing the synergy that's capable. Now, that may be through nonprofits merging with each other. It also may be through creating a virtual merger. When I was in the environmental space, a great foundation, the Saplow Foundation, achieved this, in my mind, in a brilliant manner. There were a whole bunch of small environmental nonprofits focused on clean water in Georgia. And Saplow was one of the few that would fund that activity. And the woman who ran Saplow, Vin Phyllis Bowen, called all of the nonprofits to a meeting. And she said, I don't have enough money to fund all of you. So I can either fund all of you inadequately or I can fund a few of you significantly. But that requires me to build the expertise to figure out which one of you has the best plan and which one of you I can best handicap for experience. So she said, how about this? You guys form a virtual nonprofit. And so an organization was formed called the Georgia Water Coalition. And it has about 400 members, and it's everybody from the, Chattahoochee Riverkeeper and the Altamaha Riverkeeper to Ducks Unlimited to individual garden clubs. But they all have a vested interest in clean water. And what they do every year is, among themselves, form a plan for the year. What money is going to be available, how they're going to do it. Different organizations propose money into it or propose ideas and programs. And ultimately, the coalition together carries the funding idea to the Saplow Foundation and to other foundations. And because of that coordination, These small organizations are better funded, and also there's more alignment in what they are working on. And some of those organizations are powerhouses. Trust me, I learned the hard way. Never underestimate the power of the women in the garden club. You want to make a point, at the Capitol during Environmental Day. Say, they're like Nazi panzers in sensible shoes.
I love it. That's fantastic.
Yeah, back to our idea of the degree to the sophistication of an ED or of a board. That is a fairly sophisticated concept. EDs have the sophistication to recognize that. If not, hopefully they're getting it on their boards.
Right. Well, what do you think about the notion that we need that in general, that boards are overall not trained in a nonprofit ethic. And the reason what I'm getting at is, and I'm not saying this very effectively, that the research continually shows that there's a sort of a dearth of good leadership for nonprofits across the sector, you know, that people join the board, but they're not really sure what nonprofit leadership means. What do you think about that notion?
You know, I absolutely agree with it. In fact, it's one of the reasons why I'm joining our fundraising search is to also that a strategic planning practice and a fundraising practice also require a good level of board sophistication. And, you know, I think when people join boards, they join for a couple of reasons. They join because they have an existing relationship with the organization and care about the mission. Or they join because they have an existing relationship with somebody who's on the board, and that board member says, hey, Dave or Mickey will be a great board member. But that person may not know themselves what it takes to be a great board member. And, there's a whole study and document that I've worked on. It talks about, you know, board members need to understand that they have a duty of care, that they have a fiduciary duty to support the organization, that they have a duty to govern, but not a sole duty to govern, that they have a duty to fundraise. And one of the things that we've kicked around at our fundraising search is, you know, how do we develop a training program that helps board members understand their duties before they join a board? Because there's nothing worse than a board member. No board member joins the organization with the intent to do harm. But I have seen board members do harm to organizations because that they have believed that their job is to manage the organization, not to govern the organization. Or that, you know, the worst possible one is you've got somebody who comes in and for their $10 donation expects to do $100 worth of damage in the interest of fixing things, turning things around. You know, right. That's the ED's job. That's not a board member's job.
Right. Let's go back to the notion of consolidations again. You've given us a great case study about how all these other nonprofits can form something like the Georgia Water Coalition and still, you know, be effective in the work that they do. But what about like pure consolidations? How about mergers? How do you foster that conversations between two organizations that are thinking of a merger? Or what if you run into an organization with founder syndrome and the people on that org are resisting the idea of change, even if there's good data to suggest that a merger would be beneficial?
It's a great question, Mickey. Yeah, so let's, in a time like this where we're faced in consolidation, every organization is a consolidator, a consolidation target, or is going to sit on the sidelines. And not many of them, you know, you have to be really well funded to sit on sidelines. And I've worked with organizations. For every nonprofit I've worked in, we've contemplated a merger and either decided we were the acquirer, the acquisition target, or we were going to sit on the sidelines. And that's a conversation, you know, when we're talking about the crisis that we are finding ourselves in, organizations need to have right now. And I think that's a point where a board needs to hold the ED accountable, because founder syndrome is a real thing. Mm-hmm. And if the founder says, hey, I think we're well suited to be an acquirer, and the organization only has $140,000 in the bank and is, you know, struggling to make payroll, the board needs to come back and say, no, you're an acquiree. Mm-hmm. And that decision of who's going to be an acquirer is based on your funding, your scope, and who else is out there. This is not a time for an organization to look at organic growth. So the last organization I ran was in the vision healthcare space. And if you think of vision services as a spectrum, where at one end you have basic vision screening, hey, you know, a kid in the school, can they read the eye chart? All the way to the other end, which is adaptive therapy for people who have lost their vision, and you're teaching them how to cope in the world. There are specific programs along the way with, you know, how do we help someone get free glasses? How do we help someone get eye-saving surgeries? How do we help get somebody get, a white cane? All right now in Georgia, there's about 33 organizations that do part of that. So when you're looking at putting organizations together, first of all, you want to look and say, okay, who's out there that's competing with us? Who does the same thing that we do, or that does 99% of what we do? Let's talk to them first. If you can't find a merger partner or a integration partner there, then you want to start looking beyond the scope of services you provide and say, what are related services? When I first took over running the Vision Services organization, one of our donors was adamant, you do a great job of running mobile vision clinics, so you need to launch into mobile dentistry. I'm like, no. Yeah, the commonality stops at we both operate vans.
Right.
If we're going to look at, you know, integrating, it's got to go organically with the mission we've got. And I think most EDs and most operators within nonprofits know enough about their industry to see who's out there that is complementary.
But David, I've built this great nonprofit. I worked really hard on this logo. I have a fantastic mission. I'm doing all these cool things for people. Why would I want myself to be acquired by someone else?
Yeah, one of the questions comes is, do you want to acquire? If you don't have a plan for survival, mm-hmm. Then what are your other options? And again, you know, within strategic planning, this is something every good CEO and ED is always on the lookout for. The mindset you're describing, Mickey, is hope is a strategy. That I'm looking at this and I've built something great and we were doing just fine and the entire world has changed. Yeah. So status quo, if you believe status quo is an option and you've got a plan to make it work, God bless you. And there are some organizations out there. You know, I think there are some healthcare organizations, some education organizations that are going to find a way to survive COVID intact.
Right.
For all the rest of us, for arts organizations, this is a life-threatening environment.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
For education organizations, God, especially small liberal arts colleges, this is a life-threatening organization. And for the CEO who is in denial that things may have to change, then the question comes to the board, how much faith do you have in that CEO? Right. It's a hard question. It's an uncomfortable question. There's no easy way around it. But we're charged with supporting the mission in nonprofit and accomplishing things. And now's the time to ask hard questions.
Yeah. Well, and to supplement the answer, I've been known to say to nonprofits in the past, your logo is not the thing that actually feeds people.
Oh, isn't that the truth? Isn't that the truth? I have worked for organizations that have had some of the worst branding in the world. Yeah. I have, because I was a chief marketing officer for so many years. I feel I've built some of the best branding in the world. Yeah. But the organization doesn't survive based on the logo or the branding. There's not one patient that has been, well, I think Grady Hospital has, or Grady Healthcare has great branding. Mm-hmm. The brand doesn't help patients. The people who deliver the mission help patients. The funders help patients.
Exactly. And so that's what I encourage nonprofits to look at. You know, take a look at the part that actually does help people. Don't worry about what that's called. And if folding that together with someone else's equally powerful operation makes you doubly powerful, then maybe that's the way to go. Right. So it's good stuff. Last thing I want to talk about today is you have said that many nonprofits are trapped in a poverty mindset. Can we talk a little bit about what that means?
Oh, yes. So the poverty mindset, is basically it says we can't afford to have professional business operations. They'll spend the money on the mission, but not typically on the back office stuff. And unfortunately, these organizations who have the poverty mindset typically spend or lose more money than they would spend on professional operations. So the four nonprofits I've worked at, every one of them has had a story of how they lost more money to a fraud or an embezzlement or something else that it would have cost if they had just had good controllership place in place
serious?
Beforehand.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah. That's... Oh yeah. Every nonprofit I have worked for has had a fraud before I joined it. In fact, for most of the organizations, in the last episode, we talked about the first step in the 12-step recovery is admitting you have a problem. Every organization I have joined has recruited me because I do turnarounds for a living, and they've admitted they've had a problem. In my last organization, my predecessor is in jail for having embezzled her previous employer into insolvency.
Oh my goodness.
And that was how they found out she was stealing from us. Now I will say, from a purely cynical thing, organizations having the poverty mindset and perform professional business operations has been very lucrative for my personal career.
That's too funny.
But every place I've gone in is we've been able to save money and to improve revenue for the organization by professionalizing its business practices. And that means more than just having a great accountant. People think, oh, well, I've got this accountant I really love, so I'm totally set. And so financial management and business management is more than making sure that the entries are correct in the spreadsheet. The best CFOs and best finance people know and understand accounting. The best accounting people don't really necessarily know or understand all of finance. And for a CFO, you have to live on both sides of the balance sheet. You not only have to understand the accounting and the expenses, but you have to understand revenue. If a CEO, an executive director, and a CFO don't have a laser-like focus on revenue, that's an organization that's really, really going to struggle in an environment like this, because you can't save your way to profitability. It's mathematically impossible.
Again, a lot there that I want to unpack, but it seems pretty clear. It's better to have professional help to, even if you just consider it an insurance policy against bad conduct, or to have someone sitting there to say to me, look, your expenditures are doing something weird. Even if no one's committing fraud, it's nice to have that kind of advance advice out of a professional rather than leaving up to a board who may simply miss it.
Well, you're absolutely right. And I think one of the things you're seeing that in nonprofits as they flounder around for a survival strategy right now, the combination of a pandemic and an ensuing recession creates a revenue constrained environment. And like, yet every day I'm seeing organizations lay off their fundraisers and revenue producers because they are expensive in order to preserve their operators. And those people are going to say, but demand is growing. We must spend those salary dollars for fundraisers on the mission, not revenue production. And that's a short-term focus that's simply not sustainable.
Right.
Nonprofits need to grow the scope of their operations through consolidations and organic expansions. And foundations, like you said, have been telling this for a year. If we were in for-profit, this wouldn't even be a question. Right. I think the my takeaway on this is there's a temptation right now to underfund finance and revenue functions in order to shore up operations. That's an emotional decision. My advice to any ED or CEO that's thinking that is resist that thinking.
Yeah, absolutely. And the right thing to do is to keep your fundraisers on and empower them to do their jobs, because their jobs are actually going to change a little bit during the times of pandemic as well.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. We're going to be spending less money on golf outings and art auctions and annual funds. And we're going to spend a lot more focus on major donors, on turnaround campaigns, on institutional donors.
David, I really can't thank you enough for having this conversation with me. I hope we get to do more of these again in the future.
That would be great. This is fun making here.
Yeah, absolutely. If once again, if a listener wanted to be in touch with you, how would you suggest they do that?
Easiest way to find me is go to ourfundraisingsearch.com and look under our staff, and you can find me and our contact information. We're happy to talk to anyone about strategic planning, board governance, and fundraising. It's core to what we do.
Yep, very cool. David, again, thank you for making the time to talk with me today.
My pleasure, Mickey. Thanks for having me on.
And to our listeners, thank you as always for joining us for the Nonprofit Snapcast. We value your comments and feedback via the website. That's nonprofitsnapcast.org. And if you have any questions about the consulting work that we do, please visit nonprofitsnapshot.org. That's nonprofitsnapshot, not to be confused with Nonprofit Snapcast. nonprofitsnapshot.org. Click on the consulting tab at the top of the screen and you'll see the list of things that we're currently doing in partnerships with consultants across the country. In the meantime, thanks again for joining us. We'll see you with another episode in a few days.
This has been the Snapcast. Thank you for joining us.